Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome to the F-World headquarters. I am your host with the most, the F-World icon, Sean J. Stevens. Happy Tuesday, wherever you are in the world. And happy, happy successful day today, as I got some big news to get share with you guys today. And we'll get into that and so much more today. It's going to be a huge show. Due to the fact that this is a pretty big show, that I got to share with you guys some awesome stuff and announce some big news and some big, huge things. I'm not going to be having a guest on today. And that's out of design because this show is too big to have everyone who I'd like to get on here. So we're not going to bring on a guest today, but I do have to make sure everything is ready to go. And I do want to say before I go into everything else that all shows that are priorly committed to will take place and that this podcast will continue as part of the deals and so forth. So there's that. So I guess first and foremost, I do have to get this elephant out of the room, and also so I can, I briefly want to mention this so I can quickly mention this so I can move on to more important things that are more pertinent. So social media, you got to love it. And one of the things that is one of the funniest parts of social media is it reminds me of a heckler that sits at a show. And now in pro wrestling, we have hecklers too, who like to sit there and like to shoot, you know, like to sell things at the wrestlers. They like to try to take over the show with their insults to the wrestlers. And they kind of try to make the show about the fan, is usually what those people try to do. They try to overtake. And then a good wrestler, someone who's trained on how to deal with that situation, will usually make that person feel like they're 5 inches tall and then turn the crowd on them if they're fortunate enough to do so. I am blessed to have been trained by one of the best in the business when it comes to promos. And to, for the record, I guess I've been told numerous times that, you know, the ability to be able to cut a promo off the cuff of my head and be quick with it like I am is a tool that I have that not a lot of people do. But the ability to be able to quickly go do so out off cuff and whatnot is strictly trained by wrestling. So shout out to my trainer, the late great Walter Killer Kowalski, for the training and the knowledge that he gave me to give me those skills. But it really gave me the ability to fine tune them really. Who exist, who have to coexist with the people who actually do things in life. See, I guess what strikes me interesting, the similarities between a heckler at a wrestling show or a heckler at a show or any kind of a heckler. Sometimes you'll have a heckler at a comedy show or you'll have a heckler at, you know, any other type of live performance to try to take the show away, and they view themselves as humorous. And what's funny is they are the only ones usually who think they're funny. And the joke is turned on them, which is why it's so funny when the person who is good at it turns it on them. So that being said, I see social media is full of this. And when social media really began, see, here's the thing about, you know, I don't know about all of entertainment. As I worked in film, writing and so forth, and I've also worked in pro wrestling, and I've also worked in various other forms and platforms within the genres. I've also worked for, you know, nonprofits, as well as being a bully buster, so to speak, and a public speaker on a regular basis, being a father and whatnot. So social media began way back when, so I guess it's really not far from, I guess it would be only a matter of time till these hecklers who try to take over the show would show up online. Of course, they have an online name for these people. They call them trolls, people who go upon people's pages and like to just, you know, sit there and say all kinds of things. In wrestling, we usually call them also keyboard warriors, depending on what the conversation is. I mean, we call them keyboard warriors because a lot of it is, you know, people who have been, you know, people who have all kinds of things they want to say. They may truly believe these things, but what they do is they say all kinds of outlandish statements and they challenge you and they're really tough. And then what happens, but that's all behind the keyboard, that they say these things. They'll challenge you and they'll say all kinds of things behind the comfort of their keyboard and the comfort of their home, whatever that may be. And to, you know, people who are seasoned veterans and people who have been around the block long enough don't usually pay mind to a lot of them because we know they're just out there for the admiration to say that someone put them in their place, and they take that as like a badge of honor when someone owns them online, or they turn it on themselves and say, oh, so-and-so called me this, and they make it on them. So for the most part, I don't usually mention people by name who are these people. When I encounter them, and trust me, I do encounter plenty. Jazz Vengeance, that was my early wrestling persona. Jazz Vengeance was the voice of the people, so he was a face. And for the most part, I didn't get a lot of hatred or a lot of, you know, that kind of stuff, except for the people who wanted to be cool, of course. But Jazz Fitness, my heel character, he was the complete opposite. So, of course, with that came a lot of criticism, a lot of people who wanted to say all kinds of things about Jazz Fitness. But the funny part is they're both the same person. And I do know that, even though a lot of the times in promos or whatever, I will talk to about them in the third person because they are separate. They're technically separate characters or individuals, I should say, not so much characters, but individuals, personas. Kind of like Mick Foley, legendary hardcore wrestler, had, you know, they call it the three faces of Foley. He was Cactus Jack, he was Mankind, and he was Dude Love. Three completely different character traits of himself. And then the man, Mick Foley. So for me, it would be, you know, Jazz Fitness, Jazz Vengeance, Jazz Fitness, and the Icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, is me all together. So I am the glue that holds the two. But so it's not just me. I know a lot of other people deal with these people on a regular basis, young and old, and people just have all kinds of things to say, and they love to rain on people's parade. And I have said countless times on this very podcast, you know, parents need to take up a role and a step up on their role in safety with their young people, that they need to monitor their young, their people who they're in charge of, because there's some creeps out there in the world. And I have been to war and back with a lot of them because someone has to be that voice and someone has to take action. And I'm not someone who, if I see something wrong, I'm not going to just sit back and let it happen. That's who I am. Yesterday was one of these occasions that I am reminded of. And I just found it amusing, and I had to share it with you guys, my audience. I'm trying not to laugh. I'm sorry. This is a serious thing now. Hold on. All right. So yesterday in my, I knew I had my business meeting this morning, so I didn't do a lot. I did do a lot yesterday, like I normally do. I did a lot of the various things I do normally during the day, but last night I do my, you know, usual thing where I'll give my words of encouragement on social media or whatever, and I'll reach out to certain different people. I'll return emails and messages and so forth. And I was currently working on several different things. I want to make sure the meeting this morning was taking place, and it did. And I wanted to make sure everything was in sight and that things going forward would be, you know, whatever. So I'm not fully committed to a lot of the social media stuff yesterday, as I was busy most of it. So I go out, and it was a rainy day, of course, because that's just, you know, how it is sometimes, especially where I am. And, you know, I said some words of encouragement to various different people. And all of a sudden, I had said something I came from film. I did some films and did some television. I did auditions for the films that I've made. And I have done quite a few things. And this is one of my favorite things ever, because I always find this amusing. And I got to say, I have to admit that sometimes in the past, these kinds of people would absolutely make my blood boil, because the fact that I know that they're just people who like to get a jolly off of getting someone annoyed. I don't know how smart that is. And I don't actually know what purpose they get out of it. They're amusing themselves, really. No one thinks they're funny. No one thinks they're amusing. They're not doing anything except making themselves look like they're fools. So what started was one person decided to attack my grammar and wanted to spell check my statements to the person who had nothing to do with them. And so I said, who the heck is this person? Why is he talking to me? And here's the thing. I'm on Instagram yesterday. This is where this took place. You know, it's funny. Most of my headaches come from over here. Because here's the story you don't know. I have had a history of reporting many people who I see, when they see them doing things they shouldn't and posting things they shouldn't, when they overstep their boundaries and when they start to, what I believe to be uncomfortable, or they start to be inappropriate with others, I will comment during like lives or whatever. I'll shut them down. I'll report them. So that's something you need to keep in mind for the rest of the story. So I have I have to admit, I am someone who will report people when I see inappropriate things online. You should keep that in mind. So that being said, so needless to say, this person who wanted to attack my grammar, I said, who the heck is this person? Why are they even talking to me? So I went to their page to see what they did that was so important as he was attacking my grammar. And what did you know? They have nothing posted at all. They have all these followers and they follow many people, but they don't post anything. What the heck is that? They don't even have a picture of themselves. I said, this is strange. Why would you? Anyway. Needless to say, this person I would probably suggest you not talk about people until you actually have done something. And I wrote that up, and then someone else jumps in, and this is my favorite thing. So this person proceeds, after I told the other person, you know, whatever, it was a very small interaction. The other one, they kind of were quiet, and they haven't said anything since. This other person, who I don't know from a hole in the wall, decides to call me a, quote, stalker, and then proceeded to tell me, what did he say? I'm a stalker, and a mediocre, da-da-da-da-da. And first, me being me, I wanted to make sure he wasn't talking about me. I figured maybe he was talking about the other guy, and maybe he's posting about the person whom I was complimenting, which wouldn't make any sense anyway, and I'd still give him a hard time for giving that person a hard time. But he decided to say, oh, no, it's you. You're the one I'm talking about. I said, are you kidding? So he proceeded to call me a stalker because I had given some words of encouragement to someone because I came from film and I'd done several things that are all over my page of everything I've ever done. So I go to this person's page, and wouldn't you know, they have nothing under their page, not a single post, not a single picture. But what they do have is a description of who they do and what they do. What was interesting is they had a description I've never heard of, and they were into things I've not even thought about ever getting into, nor would I ever be interested in. So here's what I think happened. He is probably one of the people, like I obviously do, I block a lot of people. I report a lot of people. He's probably one of the many people whom I either reported on behalf of someone else or someone whom I refuse to add to my account, because I take the safety of the people in which I support back very seriously. I take safety very seriously. I keep everything professional online and everywhere else because that's how you should be. Certainly, I have those I'm familiar with and I'm friendly with, so I can be jovial with people. I can use my sarcasm with them, but I still keep it professional. I don't go outside the cuff, and for the most part, whenever dealing with anybody, you're usually dealing with reps anyway. So, stupidity of this person. But anyway, he decided to tell me that I haven't done anything and that my podcast that only has one follower is, you know, not heard and blah, 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 blah. And all these other things that he thought he was able to find out. Now, remember, this is the person who called me a stalker, but yet he took the time to look up my podcast to find out how many people will subscribe to my podcast. And he also admitted that he does not follow me. Oh, so he says he doesn't follow me or whatever, and he denies that I blocked him or whatever. Or that I had to report him for other things. But regardless, these are some analytics that are very real. These are math quotes, which are also a real thing, and there's no faking math. Regardless what you say as far as how many subscribers I have, let me tell you the breakdown of where my podcast is heard in the percentage as of right now. Prior to now, before this show, here is the breakdown. In the USA, 70% of my listeners are from the US. 10% are here in Canada, 14% in Japan, 14% Germany, 14% Russia, 14% Korea, 10% England, 20% in Ireland, Aaron Cabra, 20% in Wales, 3% in Mexico. One subscriber. I haven't done the math yet. So clearly a lot more people listen to my podcast than the one subscriber that he claimed that I had I was mediocre at best. And unfortunately, I can't even mention him by name because he went by a number, which that doesn't, I'll tell you. So meanwhile, on my page, I have myself all over my social media, and me, myself, and I, and of course, all of the people and some of my accomplishments over my career and various different things. And just a few days ago, I had talked about how I entered that writing contest out of nowhere and won. So I reposted that and everything else. So as far as me not being able to do anything and being mediocre at best, or that nobody listens to this podcast, to that person... Oh, by the way, sorry, he can't really respond anymore because after that statement, not only did I share with my friends over there on Instagram what he had said and the lovely things that he was trying to disparage or trying to accuse me of, I took the higher route and first told him to kindly not use projection, which is the projection, for those people who are not familiar with the term, is a psychology term. As you guys know, I do have a degree in human services as well, but this person failed to mention anything about that. But projection is the art of, is the issue where someone feels something or someone has some kind of thought about themselves, but they put it on someone else as if it's their problem. Let's say someone is angry at someone else or someone's upset about something they're doing. But instead of taking ownership with them because they're usually arrogant and they can't get over themselves and it's too painful to really realize those things about themselves, instead what they do is they put those thoughts or feelings on to complete strangers or someone else because that's easier. That's called projection. If let's say someone's depressed and they'll say, "Hey, are you okay? You look depressed." With the person whistling and, singing up and down the thing, the person who they're saying is depressed is clearly okay at this point, but the person who is bringing up is projecting his depression onto them. Well, in this case, this person obviously has these issues and obviously is one of these creeps. So rather than me being upset at the fact that he used such an ignorant term and decided to call me such a horrendous name, I took the higher road by educating him on the art of projection and kindly asking him not to do so. And apparently not only did I find what he said offensive and whatnot, my friends at Instagram and social media and other people also agreed, and that person's no longer on Instagram. Wouldn't you know? He had nothing posted, by the way, to begin with. So there was that. Because I did look to see what great things he did, but there was nothing, or he or she, I should say. But when you go by a number and you don't actually have a picture of yourself or any kind of evidence of who you are, you're just a number, you're a nobody, you're a robot, a keyboard warrior, a troll. So I didn't get rattled yesterday like I normally would be frustrated at the situation. Oh, it depends on what my mood is. See, I today was going to happen, so I was in a pretty good mood, and I was focused on that. And then this person trying to, you know, get the jollies off on someone else, he found out real quick that I'm not someone who you can just, you know, sit there and mouth off to, that's going to sit there like, oh, okay. I'm sorry. I have a little bit more pride than that. And I come from pro wrestling. I had a live microphone, and any party who was in the crowd who dared to challenge Jazz Fitness. See, Jazz Vengeance was the voice of the people, so he didn't get into it with the fans. But Jazz Fitness, being a heel, he would purposely pick, you know, look for arguments with the fans, because that's what we call cheap heat, right? Because as a heel, you're supposed to be the bad guy. You're supposed to get the fans not to like you. So I went to great lengths to make sure that the fans hated me anyway. But a heckler heckling Jazz Fitness, oh boy, give me a microphone, and the person usually got humbled real quick. And that was just with the simple art of my words. Because at the end of the day, I was in the ring. One of my favorite ones was the person who was sitting there telling me, you know, how horrible Jazz Fitness is and da-da-da. I said, well, you know, Ace, I just want to let you know how grateful I am that you spent your money. I wanted to say thank you. I should also say thank you to your parents for allowing you, one, out of the basement of their house to drop you off here today with your allowance to pay your money to see me in this ring while you sat there in that seat to watch me cut, make you look like you're 2 inches tall. Congratulations. And thank you for your parents for contributing you to society. So needless to say, the other members of the crowd, now remember, I'm a heel, but the fact that I tore that guy into pieces just like that for being stupid, he found out, and like a lot of other people found out, I can go to war with anyone over words, but I also can back them up too. And it was a very true statement. I was, in fact, in the ring, and I was, in fact, putting on a show, performing while he sat in the crowd to cheer, and paid money to see me do so, for the record. So basically, he paid me to insult him, is what he did. Kind of like a comic for those, well, not like Will Smith. Of course, Smith. Anyway, I'll get into that because that's, I guess, more of a political statement. But I can tell you this. I have met Chris Rock. I have not met Will Smith. But I'm going to say this too. If I was to ever make a joke and it was clearly that it was a joke and Will Smith was ever to walk up on me, he wouldn't even dream of slapping me because I'm not going to stand there and let you do that, first of all. And second of all, you wouldn't be there to pick up your award. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that. The moral of the story is I win. The other person, by the way, who wanted to attack my grammar and decided to, you know, take that road, I decided to just, you know, let him be until he's overstepped his bounds. I did post about it today on social media, and I shared both of those things in the screenshots of how someone who has nothing to add to society, who has nothing going in their life, has plenty to say about someone who clearly does have many things. I took a screenshot of just my first page and of, you know, pictures, whatever. And one, I have, I think on that account, I have like 500 and some 538 images on this new account, on this account. And then on top of that, I have X amount of followers. And here's the thing about the followers, what you don't know. I usually drop a bunch of people who either seem creepy, seem like weirdos, don't seem real. And if I know that you're fake, I'm going to block you. If you're a creep, I'm going to get not going to accept and you're going to be gone. If you overstep or I find out that you're, you know, whatever the case may be, or you're, you know, insulting my friends or the people who I support, then I'm going to block you and report you on top of that. So when you see my subscribers or the people who, not subscribers, the people who follow me, I take their safety and the safety of everyone whom I follow very seriously. And anyone who violates those things will feel, not only will you not be welcome to on my page, I will make sure you're not on Instagram or any other social media platform that you do so choose to be a clownfish to do so. So now that that is out of the way and that I have chastised them, and this is a message to a lot of the other people who may be going through something similar with these people who like to talk all kinds of smack and like to, you know, try to get their own selves over, try to be some funny, do something humorous, right? And by the way, just going back to the gentleman who called me a stalker and talked about this podcast, he called me a stalker, yet he doesn't follow me. And he looked at my profile. He looked at my podcast, even went to the links to look for, see how many subscribers I had. So needless to say, you know, stalker, I think that's funny. So needless to say, the projection thing really stuck with him because that's exactly what that is. And that's an example of what projection is, for the record. And the other things he was calling me, also projection, because I wasn't the only one and my friends agreed. Thank you very much. So that being said, you know, I have to take a second to talk about something, because we're not going to go off on the subject of, you know, trolls and bullies and dealing with all that, because I'm used to that, and I'm sure everyone else is too. And quite frankly, I'm not going to overtake this show with giving these kinds of people any kind of, you know, credit, because basically this is kind of what they want. They want someone to mention their name. They want someone to make them relevant when they're not. So I'm not going to go into great detail, but this is more of a PSA to the other people who may be dealing with these things. How I dealt with this is kind of how everyone should kind of deal with this. Immediately, if someone on social media or anything else says something outlandish or insulting, makes you feel belittled or whatever else, immediately call it attention and make sure they know that you are aware that they, you know, that they're just using words. They're keyboard warriors, nothing more, nothing less. And when they have nothing to post, they actually lose their credibility as far as what they can comment on, as far as successes, because they lose their ability to do so. Hold on 1 second, folks. You're hearing my... I've silenced my phone, but my phone does not want to silence for me right now. I apologize, folks. I'm going to put this on vibrate. That was my phone, ladies and gentlemen. As people are aware, I did let people know that I have some very cool stuff to share with you guys, and I'm very proud of all those things. And what? So these were people letting me know that they're excited to hear them. Apparently, there must be one of the people in these algorithms that the person claims only one person subscribed to. But anyway, again, I'm moving past the negativity to the positive things. I want to tell you guys, you know, kind of a story real quick. So people know I used to compete, as I've said before, in freestyle tournaments and martial arts. And I did that starting at 4 because I had a lot of energy and I had a lot of just energy. And I also like to learn and things of that nature. And my grandmother thought it would be a good idea to get me into martial arts since down the street was a dojo. So I learned, she also was a firm, she was strictly off the boat. She was Irish, like I said. So she got me involved with this dojo down the street and I started training. And my the sensei that we had, his name was Lou, Sensei Lou, and he was a fantastic individual. And unfortunately, he's no longer with us. He's passed over and he still lives within us, but he's no longer with us right now. But what was amazing about Lou is he was able to get trainers from various different elements of regiments, because our dojo was welcoming to multiple forms. So our dojo focused on Kenpo karate, judo, and also Muay Thai. And then later would adopt the Chukkudo, which is Chuck Norris's style of karate, which for those people who are not familiar with Chukkudo, it actually has various difference of all of those and then a few more things as Chuck Norris developed it. And it has some submissions type stuff. And I actually prefer submission wrestling or submissions in general. I've said that before. It does have some elements of jujitsu involved, even though it's not jujitsu. And for the record, I want to make sure people are aware, I am not trained in traditional jujitsu. I am trained in, countless other things. It doesn't mean I don't respect people who are trained in jujitsu, and I do. I respect everyone who is committed to whatever it is that they're working towards, because I know the hard work and dedication goes into being successful in those elements. Because it doesn't matter if you do, jiu-jitsu, kenpo karate, judo, Muay Thai, boxing, or regular boxing rather, Greco-Roman wrestling, taekwondo, whatever you're taking, whatever art form you're taking, whatever it is, you're obviously, if you're putting 100% into it, then it shouldn't matter what branch you take as long as you're willing to commit to it. So I respect everyone who is committed to whatever it is training that they have. And a lot of them really cross over to each other anyway in some elements and whatnot. In all honesty, I just found out that there is a Hapkido school near me as well as a jiu-jitsu place, a BJJ place not too far from me too. If I wanted to sharpen up my images, I could learn those things. And actually, a couple of my UFC friends who have competed in both UFC and the MMA and in pro wrestling, they actually helped me learn some of those skills as they are trained in jiu-jitsu and whatnot, as well as the things I am trained with, and then some. Thank you to those people as well, Dan Pewter and Ken Shamrock, for all of that. All honesty, I wish I had, if I really thought about it, I really would have liked to have gone to the Lion's Den back in the day. That was, of course, it was known for being one of the most brutal UFC training areas. But frankly, at that age, I was still competing in the youth divisions of the freestyle tournaments. And again, when I was 18, I decided to go into pro wrestling anyway, because that was my first goal anyway before it was any of the others. So that being said, there are things we do, the work that we put into achieving the various different stages of our lives. And I had shared a story the other day about what happened to my trophies that I've always asked about. Where are all your trophies you used to get? Because the belt system that people get now, where they give the title belts, it crossed over from a combination of pro wrestling and, boxing, what you see on TV. That's where that came from, for the record. So people who, want to know where the title thing came from, because prior to that, it was either you went by ribbons, trophies, your name on a plaque or whatever. Rankings, and I had a lot of that, and I competed up and down the East Coast, and I was proud of all of those. And I also shared the story on the last show about how I have the one draw on my record, And I am working also on getting the old footage from the tournaments, because yes, they were recorded. And I found out from the guy who took over our dojo that he had came across the old sensei's video stuff. So we're currently in the process of converting all of those VHSs into DVD and then maybe to digital, so that I can share you guys and show you guys exactly what I did. And but to fair warn you, who you see now is not who I was. I've said it before and I'll say it again. We take stages of our life and we increase ourselves as we go on. When I was competing and at the top of my game, I was under 100 pounds and I was under 5'8". So I was short and I was skinny as a rail, almost bone thin. But I'll tell you, the frame that I had, the intensity that I had, the force that I had, the knowledge that I restored, and the philosophy and the being able to think outside the box and be able to prepare, the element of studying my opponent, the element of human chess became a factor. And that, my friends, is how I got to be as good as I was in the freestyle tournaments. But it's also, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, in the middle of all of my freestyle training, you know, I would discover pro wrestling. I go to my first pro wrestling event, of course, watching it with my uncles, who I said before, my family weren't always into the whole, they didn't really get the martial arts stuff. They definitely didn't all get into the wrestling stuff. And they didn't get into the, you know, creativity and the writing part, because I was also dabbling with that even at a young age as well. But so they didn't get a lot of me in general, but didn't matter, because my teachers, my grandmaster, my sensei, my grandmother for the most part, my mother for the most part, somewhat, but, you know, we always have that one person, right? We always take these steps to grow who we are. And I talked the other day on, Monday. It was yesterday, wasn't it? I took part in, you know, Motivational Monday. I realized I went on way longer than I should have. But the moral of the story and the title of the thing was The Resume of Life. And that is something that, you know, I talk about here on the show here and there, is the things that we encounter in our everyday lives, the things that we have achieved, the things that we have successes, our failures, the relationships we grow. I view them as the resume of life. And what a resume is, for those people who are too young to know what a resume is, I don't know, who aren't familiar with a term of what the resume is. A resume is something, when you want to apply for a job, you would bring a typed out document that will highlight the things in which you have done with work, with your school, your skills, people they can contact to verify these things, how they get in hold of you. These are what a resume is. So in hindsight, everything you do in life gets added to that resume of life. Everything you do gets your experience, your skills you learn along the way. If I was to show you my resume, which is ridiculous, yeah, you know what? I do have my resume, a copy of my resume, and it's the condensed version of my resume. This is my work resume. And, of course, it has my name, and it says that I am a multi-talented and successful. I am me, my name, Sean J. Stevens, and I'm a multi-talented and successful, dependable individual. And then it has my contact information. I'm not going to give you that because you don't need it. here's, you know, the work experience. I feature my podcast here because this is something that I take very seriously. This is something I've been doing since 2020 and whatnot. And also I have worked for World Wrestling Entertainment, writing and creative. I've worked for AMC Theaters, a couple different, various different entertainment type of venues like conventions and stuff like that. That's that kind of last few jobs there. Then on the other side, it has Other things, my education. I have a bachelor's in human services from one place. I have a master's in film production. I have a master's in arts in another place. So two masters. I also had an associate's degree before I got my bachelor's degree in human services. I first got my first two at one place, and I got another one, another, and of course, from New England Institute of Art, UMass Amherst, Quincy College are my three schools. And then, of course, skills, which is what I had to help my wife. I had to cut those down because I originally had three pages of skills, because instead of writing down what I've done as far as every job, because really most employers only want to see your last, you know, your last 3 years of employment. If you have only had one job in those last 3 years, definitely only use that one, or maybe one other one just to give them an idea, because what happens is if they see more than one job, they kind of have an idea that maybe you're not as loyal, because if they're too busy to look at the dates, like for example, the ridiculous length I was at all my jobs is ridiculous. But you know, in World Wrestling Entertainment, technically, I left with, you know, the opportunity that I could come back. It wasn't like I was terminated or anything. I left to take care of a family matter. And, you know, someday I could have come back, which is where we'll get into a little bit later. So the podcast would be something I've done since 2020. And then, of course, the last three jobs there. And that's what my resume has. That's my actual resume. And then my life resume would probably be a short novel, which is what I'm working on currently. And as of yesterday, I have had a lot of cool meetings because down the street from my new home is a local publisher who has agreed to publish my my memoir called I'll wait on the title of the book because it's quite interesting, but it's basically going to be my memoir. And I've been working on it for a little while. Things from a writing tip from one of the people who I'm working with for film, the horror icon himself from Bangor, Maine, who has been helpful in me, you know, writing this memoir in the way that I have, which is a little different and unconventional, but thanks to his tip. Thank you, Stephen King, for your tip. So it was very helpful and appreciative, because with the help of this local publisher, they're going to be publishing my book once it's completed. And they're going to be making it available for audio and whatever the case may be, and available all in the stores. And that'll be probably in time for my birthday. That's the first big thing. So that will be something big, because that's going to have a lot of my how I became me, and it's told my way versus having someone write it for me or writing about me, because what you've gone through and have the same feeling as the one who's loved it. And to me, I would much rather hear it from the person directly than hear it third party or whatever. That's my first thought anyway. So that's not the only announcement I have. So those people who know, as I mentioned before, prior to me starting this podcast, you know, as we already know, I've been in the pro wrestling business for a long time. I've been in the filmmaking business for a long time, and writing, of course. So what happens when you have those abilities together? Well, what happens is you have opportunities and you make acquaintances and you make relationships throughout all of these various different platforms. So a couple things real quick. And this is probably one of the best things one of the best meetings I've had in a long time. So I have to get these things ready here for you guys. These are actual statements from people whom I've known a long time. So let me just back up for a few seconds here. So as you know, I've been in the wrestling business since I started wrestling school 6 months before I graduated high school. So that was going to be, it was the year of 1998. So 6 months before high school was November. So November is my anniversary when I first walked in the door at the Killer Kowalski School of Wrestling in Malden, Massachusetts. Malden, Everett, Massachusetts. Walked down those stairs and met Kowalski for the first time. At the time I met him, I was, and this is, you know, sounds a little bluer than it is really. At the time I met Kowalski, I was living alone. I was emancipated, meaning that I was my own guardian. Of course, at 18, you're already an adult anyway. But what you don't know is that prior to that, when I was 16, I was emancipated by court to become my own guardian because my stepfamily and my family were proven to be toxic and that it was proven that I could take care of myself. And famously, in 2006, in 1996, me and other people like myself would form what was now known as the F4L, the lifestyle of the F4L, which is where this podcast comes from, where your friends, who are your real friends, the ones who are there for you, the ones who support you, the ones who believe in love, care, and compassion, understand, respect for each other's differences. These are the morals of the F4L. And this is what we formed because we came from families that did not have these things, and we had that, and we became our family. That was in 96. When I was going to be graduating high school, because of the fact that I was, prior to me living on my own, being in my own guardian and being in charge of myself, clearly I needed to live somewhere, and I was still in high school. I had sports for the most part up until my senior year, as I mentioned. My senior year of high school, I want you to picture this schedule for a regular high school senior. I had regular school. I had wrestling. I had whatever the sport is I was doing. In the fall, it was soccer or football for the world audience, because it is football to me as well, by the way. For the American audience, I should say it's soccer. I had soccer in the fall. I had wrestling in the winter, and then in the spring I had swimming, which is how I broke in my sports. So those are my three elements that I would do. And so I had those going on, picture that now. And anyone who does these things can actually tell you what goes into those things. I had that going on. I had school going on. I was, writing a lot of various different pieces during my senior year. We're only looking at my senior year of high school. Wrote a lot of papers, wrote a lot of extra credit things, did the sports like I did. 6 months before I graduated high school, wrestling school, as I mentioned, it was November of 1998. I walked into the Kowalski School of Wrestling, downstairs, I should say. Met Kowalski because I was 18, the youth home that I lived in because I was too young to live on my own. And whatnot. And I had left the youth group home when I was 17, because at that time I was already too old, and they went into a shelter. So a homeless shelter at 17 years old, still in high school, still doing sports. I want you to picture this. And the priest who lived there, who ran the shelter, as well as my teachers who believed in me, they had went to Kowalski, and also a relative who I had just met at that time. She was my aunt on my father's side. I've never met my father, for the record, but I know who my aunt is and my cousin, and people have heard me talking about him here and there, so it's cool. But thanks to them, those three people, when they asked me what I wanted to do, I wanted to become a professional wrestler. Now, we are also talking about 18. I was still doing freestyle tournaments as well. But I knew I had to give up one for the other, so I sacrificed my freestyle tournaments, the martial arts, in preparation for my wrestling career. So in November, I started wrestling and started practice. And so now my schedule was high school during the day, And then while I'm doing high school, all of my assignments would be done before I even left school, because I would do it in various different ways in many places. I want to get it done. And I did also, in addition to that, I wrote various different little writing assignments and things like that. On top of that, I had the steady short story series, the Friendar series that I was writing that people loved to read. That came out once a month. So that was that. And also my teacher had, my English teacher, who believed in a lot of my writing, she had submitted my short story called Never Letting Go to a local publisher at that time to represent my city, not the school, but the city. She didn't tell me at first, but then she told me afterwards when the book told me that they were going to honor my short story as representing my city, which at that time was a small little city. So in the book called Massachusetts Pride, my short story, Never Letting Go, was published in that book. But unfortunately, due to the fact of finances, the fact that I was so busy and other things, I never actually got a copy of the book. But I did have a copy of the short story that had the, you know, letter of, you know, appreciation, letter of submissions and stuff like that, which was kind of cool. And also, she also submitted a poem that was also featured in that same book. So that was kind of cool. But then I also had pro wrestling school on top of the regular sports that I would do. So if you guys are following, that's a lot of work that goes into that. So then when high school ended and I graduated high school with honors, 14th in class, thank you very much, and my real F4L was there and not one single blood relative was there because they didn't believe I would be there to begin with. But my F4L was there. When I graduated high school with honors, I was able to fully commit to wrestling school, and I would finish wrestling school, was signed to my first wrestling contract to Old School Extreme Championship Wrestling out of Philadelphia, ECW for short. My first boss in wrestling, fun trivia, was Paul Heyman. I got to remember that for later on. Throughout my career, my wrestling career, I had met several great people in my career early on. I was Jazz Vengeance was my character, because when Kowalski wanted to know who I was, what is your nickname, who is the person, I told him the story of how I got my nickname. I've told that story in the show before, so I'm not going to go into that right now. And so this Kowalski said, that's who you are, you're Jazz Vengeance. So I was Jazz Vengeance, the voice of the people, the man who, because at the end of the day, no matter who you are, what you are, and how big or small, if you cross the people, if you cross me, if you cross the people who he cares about, vengeance comes for all. And that's how that started, and various different other things. And so that was my first character. I was signed to ECW. I did some great shows. I was signed to a local contract at that time. So anytime they wrestled in my hometown or my state, I would be on those shows. Usually it was three shows a time they came. Had a blast, had some great memorable matches. Some of my biggest rivals were Danny Doring, who I seem to wrestle more than anybody else. Roadkill, of course, incredible, who was probably one of the most amazing people you could meet. I met a lot of friends along the way. When I was my first day in ECW, first night, I was at the Wonderland Dog Track. And famously, there was an incident that took place there. And that wasn't my first night, by the way, but there was an incident that happened famously in one of the shows. And I was there along with another New England friend of mine who I would meet later on in my career in ECW. His name is Pat the Brat Piper, the illegitimate son of Roddy Piper. One of the best rivals I've ever had as far as on the mic. Love Pat. He's a great guy. And I hope he's doing well. I haven't talked to him in a little while. So anyway, moral of the story is a lot of those guys in ECW, my first night, I was only 19 years old for those people who don't know, because my birthday's in March. So 19 years old, I walked into the locker room, and I'll tell you the things I've seen. But I also made a promise to myself, and people, this is where people can also roll their eyes and whatever, but I don't use drugs and alcohol. I'm drinking water as I speak. I do have a bit. I do drink my fair share of coffee. Trust me when I tell you that. I don't drink. I don't drug. I don't smoke. These are things that I have seen over my years with either family, relatives, or my friends. These are things I've never seen help anyone. So I made a decision, one, I would never partake in those things, and especially when I was going to be performing. The other thing I tried to prevent is working with people who were under the influence of something, because that's a safety factor, all right? It's all about being smart and safe. So I worked for the ECW first, had some great matches, as I said, and unfortunately the company was going under and they released a lot of local talent, me being one of them. So then I was involved in a couple other little companies, in ECW, Top Rope, Ring of Honor, some of those places I ended up locally. And I would meet people who would become lifelong friends. And I never forget the people who helped me get me along the way. I made friends with, of course, one of my closest friends in Ring of Honor, two of my closest friends in Ring of Honor, really, are a guy named Phil Brooks, who I met, who has the same kind of feeling towards drugs and alcohol. Of course, you guys know Phil Brooks probably better as CM Punk. I really respected the hell out of the guy. He's a great worker. He had a great mind back then. He could rival me with the mic, but here's the thing. He and I, because of our we were on the same page when it came to the straight edge lifestyle, right? No drugs, alcohol, whatever. And we were a tag team called the Original Straight Edge Society that he would later, go on to do again much later in his career. But we were the Original Straight Edge Society, Punk and I. And then when he left Ring of Honor, I was paired with another close friend of mine from Atlanta, Georgia. And if you ask me, he's one of my other, probably on my top, if not the top, best wrestler I've ever seen. And that's AJ Styles. Great guy, great friend of mine. And there's several other people I've made along the way who are also important. And all those relationships I made over the year, I always cherish those things as a sense of brotherhood in the wrestling locker room. We stick together, we band together. And it's great to see these guys whenever we do shows and they promote the whole brotherhood element. And I've read a lot of legends around the way and I've thanked them for opening the door for people like me. And that's the one thing that a lot of people today forget. If it wasn't for the legends and the people who put the work in to get us where we need to be, we wouldn't be there and the business wouldn't even exist. So the people out there who don't want to listen to people who've been around the block a few times, who don't think they need to listen to the legends, you guys need to find a new line of work, because that's probably the most disrespectful thing you could ever do to anybody. I always am thankful for the legends and the list and the information I get over the years, and I harness everything I get part of that resume of life. And I've met a lot of friends along the way. Now, in 2019, In 2003, at the height of my career as a Jazz Vengeance, the good guy wrestler, I had incredible matches. I was in good shape, by the way. I should mention that, because when I was 13, I started lifting weights. And clearly, when I mentioned the sports that I did, those people who do those sports know the kind of physical conditioning you need for those. So I had that up into that point, and I was a lot taller. I was actually 6 feet tall, and as the promo goes, I am 6 feet tall, 210 pounds. I'm the man, myth, and legend, Jazz Vengeance. Don't be afraid, be terrified. That was the Jazz Vengeance character that I used until, obviously many years. But in 2003, I was in one of the wrestling magazines, and I was labeled as I was awarded the golden microphone because of my ability to cut promos, being able to talk in front of the crowd, being able to be good on the microphone, being able to reach and tell believable promos. That was what I became good with. especially above everything else. So that would go on. And then I would work for the JCW, which is Juggalo Championship Wrestling, who did some shows here. And, you know, it's not their fault. They know that I came from ECW, as this other person did. And sometimes what these places do when they have, like, little shows is they'll book people who may have a history together because they think it'll work out better. But unfortunately, due to the timing, they didn't look at that. See, I was in ECW slightly before this other person came in, because he was there when he actually left before they ended too, but he was there after I was released. He came in. So I didn't have any knowledge of him really in the ring. Of course, I was too busy and focused on everything I was doing in wrestling at the time. Also, on the top of that, I was volunteering a lot of places. I was doing a lot of public speaking to promote anti-bullying and things like that outside the ring. I had my first place, as I mentioned, in the middle of that. So I was a very busy individual, and I was injured in the ring. There was a spot where I was supposed to go through a table, and he didn't do his part of the bill for that, so I was injured. And unfortunately, the doctor said I was not able to go to a work. I wasn't able to work out. Wasn't able to wrestle for a little while. I had to find something else. That is when I went to regular college, by the way. And that's where the degrees you heard about, I earned those degrees while I was injured and in recovery and rehab and everything else. It took me a few years. And then, of course, like always, we got called back to the ring. And now I had put some weight on because I wasn't allowed to work out. And I became, when I found a local company called BCW or SRW, they saw that I still had the ability to cut promos. They saw that I still knew what I was doing, but they thought, we need people who can talk and show the students how to cut promos, how to hold themselves. So they presented me being Jazz Vengeance, the good guy. They thought, let's make you Jazz Fitness, the unfit fitness guru. Because I look like I'm out of shape, but in reality, I could probably run a ring better than anybody smaller than me. It goes by muscle memory, really. But the look, the deceiving of the, it's a show, right? So that was the idea. So I would have my own talk show segment at shows called the Fitness Center, where I would do and conduct interviews with, you know, the quote, big star or whatever else to get other things over. And it became one of the company's biggest selling points and one of the most attended segments on the show. It was a local independent show. It wasn't, what old people might call it a mud show, I guess you'd say, during BCW, even though it was featured in the PWI, the same magazine I was featured in as a Golden Microphone years before. So needless to say, Jazz Fitness was a thing. That was also my introduction to YouTube. And I would become friendly with all the people from YouTube. I already had made a film or started to make a film prior to that. From the film grant that I made based on the song that I wrote that I also talked about the other day as well. The Good Old Boy, which the movie I wrote, the screenplay was based on the song that I wrote. So there's that. And in 2019, my body, unfortunately, I've had numerous injuries, my knee especially, and I've had numerous chair shots. And unfortunately, younger days, in my wrestling days, I was proud of the fact that I took the, quote, Mick Foley chair shots. Mick Foley was at one of the shows that I took one of those, quote, Mick Foley chair shots. He told me I was out of my mind for doing so, and he recommended me not do those again. Unfortunately, that puts a lot of toll on your mind, getting hit repeatedly with steel chairs. A lot of people believe wrestling's fake, and it's not always as fake as it seems. The chairs are real. Tables are real, even if they're gimmicked or not. It's all about how you do these things, how you sell these things. And the fact that I took the chairs like a champ because of my soccer days, that's kind of what became part of my selling point also. So because of that, in 2019, I decided maybe it's time for me, Jazz Fitness or whatever, to step away from the pro wrestling ring, because at that point I was already established on YouTube And also on top of that, my son and I would start what was called Dream Masters or Dream Matches on YouTube, which is the online YouTube show where we wanted to find out who was tougher than who. Yes, get those questions. You know, is Chuck Norris better than Bruce Lee in his prime? Can King Kong really take out Godzilla? Can Freddy really take Jason? Can Chucky beat the leprechaun? And this went on and on and on. We got fan suggestions for our matches, and that's kind of how our show was built around. And, you know, I decided it was time when they inducted me into the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, time for me to step out of the ring and maybe take more of a constructive, creative role, which is what I did. And I was asked and I was requested to go and try to work for World Wrestling Entertainment on their creative team. I met some awesome people. A lot of people don't know who Freddie Prinze Jr. is, or maybe they do. Freddie Prinze Jr., who's probably known to some people as an actor from various roles in the 90s. He was in Scooby-Doo. He was Fred. He was also in a lot of the rom-coms and stuff like that. But what you might not know is he was also a brilliant mind in wrestling. He helped out a lot in WWE, and I got to meet with him a few times. But my role specifically was to come up with something for a character or one of the wrestlers they couldn't figure out what to do with. Brought me on the creative team because I believe in long-term storytelling, long-term booking, which was at that time. And also, I should back that up because of the people in which I know. In wrestling, if you are, you know, if people have your back and they'll mention your name, they'll go with the suggestions of the people in which they trust, right? The big top dogs, so to speak. And also they know people who I am friendly with who trust me. So when I was in there, when I was over there, I was, you know, friendly with CM Punk, and I was friendly with all the other guys who were already on the roster. And WWE at that time and CM Punk were not at speaking terms. Punk had not been in wrestling for quite some time. Punk had went to the UFC and tried that. A lot of people like to give him a hard time because, you know, he might not have flourished in the UFC, but at least he tried it. At least he was there. And don't let it fool you. He is tough. Don't think that he's not. But, you know, regardless of the fact, he went out there and he went into the UFC. A lot of people don't even do that. But I almost believe that one of the reasons why they brought me on board is because, you know, Punk, like a lot of us in wrestling, has been, you know, people have told us stories before and, you know, there's a trust element there. Wrestlers will trust people who they know won't screw them over, so to speak, and wrestling is one of those places that is like that. And I'm telling you this long story to give you the paint these guys this picture. But because of that relationship there and the relationship of all these other people, you know, I was, you know, because remember who my, I said I was going to go back to this anyway. So remember when I said who my first boss in pro wrestling was? Paul Heyman. Well, Paul Heyman was also on the creative committee back then, and he was someone who they had a lot of trust in. They still do. He's still there. And Paul respected the hell out of me. He knew how I like to tell stories and whatnot. What you might not know is the YouTube show that a lot of people view to be kind of comical or lighthearted, the other guys, my friends, watch our YouTube show. They watch our YouTube wrestling show on a regular basis. In the last several months, they've been, or since my absence, a couple of certain people have been watching intently because sometimes, you know, you miss what you had. So now why did I leave the WWE creative team since I was there in 2019 before that? And up until just before 2020, I was with the WWE creative team. Why did I leave? My son was struggling in school. There was a chance he might not have been able to graduate. If I'm going to be honest, my kids and my family comes first no matter what. Even in my goal dream of pro wrestling, my family always comes first. And my son needed me, my family needed me, so I left World Wrestling Entertainment to tend to my family. And I was respected for that, which I know I appreciated. And I'm sure it didn't make everyone else happy. And I'm sure it didn't, you know, really, wasn't really liked by everybody. I should say that too. But for the most part, everyone kind of understood. I'm still friends with a lot of the guys who were on the roster. And people who know, I haven't watched actual wrestling on television in a little while. And that is out of respect to the guys who were still in the business, because I wasn't liking what I was seeing. I didn't like to see my friends who were on television doing ridiculous storylines or being made to be look like fools, or someone or a character who I, or an individual who I worked a lot with, seeing what they did after I left with that character, and then just him leaving altogether was absolutely heartbreaking to watch. So I don't watch this stuff. So I started doing the YouTube wrestling show, and since my son was, you know, finishing high school or whatever, and he was doing his own things on YouTube or whatever, I was left making my own kind of a show. And what was Dream Matches went to Dream Masters, and then Women Warriors Wrestling was added as well. That was our female division. What you guys don't know is that those individuals were still watching our show. And WWE was still very much watching a lot of the things that we were doing. And out of all the other people out on YouTube, considering we are credited, my son and I, as being the originators of that format, we are the first people to post a, you know, video game character or video game match on YouTube, as YouTube has said this. And because of that, and the fact that on our shows, we still tell stories, we still make these characters. So last week, I didn't tell this story, is that last week I got my email, and I have to be honest with you, I kind of expected to get an email shortly or soon. I was expecting an email because creative in WWE has changed, management in WWE has changed, and the person now in charge of WWE is actually he's actually an alumni of my wrestling school, Kowalski School. Hints, hints, hints. But also, oh, by the way, his name also is Paul. But anywho, but because Paul Heyman is still there, and a lot of my other friends are still there, it has come to my attention that, you know, since he is now in charge, they have requested, many of them who are on the roster have requested my return. And I don't think I've ever heard of, you know, people who say, hey, listen, these people, they miss you. They want you back here. And my son finished high school. He graduated, by the way. And so, you know, things are stable in my family. So they, you know, told me some of the feedback some of the guys, some of the boys, as we say, had, you know, had to share about what they've seen on our show. Because out of any of the shows on YouTube, outside of the up, up, down, down that Creed takes care of, Creed as Xavier Woods, after the current WWE superstar, on part of the new day. Well, what you don't know is he is one of those people who watch quite a bit, and they take a lot of feedback from him, but also several other executives watch our show on a regular basis because of my ties and our lineage within the company. I still do the promos and so forth. So I do have a few things I want to share with you guys. Some feedback from the actual WWE superstars who are watching our YouTube wrestling show with our characters. I can't believe I just said that, but that's kind of cool, right? Here are some things. First of all, they like the fact that I'm using real people and made them. I got these real-life people with no gimmicks, just themselves. They got themselves over, as I say, because remember on our YouTube wrestling show, we don't control the matches. We put the two people together, it sets a demo, may the best man win. Pro wrestling isn't necessarily like that, but the fact that I'm able to tell those stories with those characters, and the characters are able to get, and I can get both sides over no matter who they are. That is something that is still a thing because I still do commentary. The first bit of feedback comes from Stephanie McMahon. I just said that, yes, Stephanie McMahon, who actually applauds the fact that we consider our female roster to be women warriors of wrestling. Now, the algorithm, WOW, that actually exists for another company, unfortunately. Even though ours is hyphenated and is completely different, the other one is Women of Wrestling, I think is the other one. We are Women Warriors of Wrestling. It's true, two W's, but it doesn't look good, WW, OW. So what we, one of the things that I changed recently is even though our females are still just as important as the men, and one of the things that Stephanie really enjoyed seeing is the fact that we actually take that serious. And the fact that we do give the respect to the women that we feature on our show, that we can consider them to be warriors. So I changed them from Women Warriors Wrestling to Dream Warriors of Wrestling, to Dream Warriors. Since we always refer to our men or our male superstars as Dream Masters, now our females are Dream Warriors of Wrestling. So that's kind of cool. So they enjoy, she enjoys that, and she gives the feedback that, you know, that our women that we feature, who are real women, are absolutely incredible. And the fact that we show the respect to the women as we do the men, and that we show that the women are capable of holding the capability of inventing our shows. She recommended us for that. So, you know, I share that, you know, knowledge. I share that with that success with a lot of our female audience members. One of Stephanie's favorite characters is a real person. She is the Duchess Lana King out of Canada. She was a guest on the show not long ago. She is a real person who's Stephanie McMahon, who likes to watch in the ring. In all honesty, she has a lot of, even though on our show she has defeated Stephanie, and just about everybody, is she's the only undefeated person on our roster. She is a lot of respect for her, and I want to let the Duchess Lana King know, if she's listening, that Stephanie McMahon, who is right up there in the offices of WWE, is very much in respect of your work, as well as their tag team champions and my daughter and so forth, who are also featured. And our new superstar, Angela Russell, who just joined our roster not long ago. So everyone's getting great feedback from her. They love it. This was what the meeting was this morning, was them giving me the feedback from what everyone's been telling me in their traditional offer and telling me why they want me back. So the next little bit comes from Woods himself, Consequences Creed, who watches our show a lot. He has a soft spot for a lot of our high flyers or smaller kind of people, but also entertainer people. But here's something even cooler. Xavier Woods, Consequences Creed, is a big fan of oops, I don't know what happened there. Consequences Creed, Xavier Woods, is a big fan of Walker Campbell, who is one of our newest superstars, as well as JoJo the Model Sebastian, who, if you guys don't remember, I actually ran, well, me and him, JoJo Sebastian the Model, we actually did a couple of these episodes where we were co-hosting together. Remember that? Well, Consequence Creed loved that because he thought he was hysterical. He loved to see that element that I was able to do that. And another thing was the fact that I gave JoJo the ability to be free with style, and the fact that I am I talk to everyone who's on our roster on a regular basis to keep them informed, to update them, to keep them as part of the thing. So Consequences Creed, who runs Up, Up, Down, Down, is a fan of JoJo Sebastian and Walker Campbell, respectfully. Not that he doesn't like everybody else, but those are two of his tops. And he loved the fact that JoJo was able to do commentary And Jackson R. Scott, who also do commentary once, he, someone else is a fan of him. One of my old tag team partners way back in the day, AJ Styles, is a big fan of Jackson R. Scott, as well as several others. He wanted me to say to Grayson Russell, who is the new BA champion, that he's proud to have him come from Atlanta. And he's nice to see someone from Atlanta represent, or someone from Georgia to represent Georgia, is what from what my old former tag team partner and current WWE superstar AJ Styles had said. And some other feedback was from, various different other places. I've heard comments from people referring to the Stritzel Fight Club as people they would never want to face in the ring. And this is coming from current tag team champions. They said they would never want to face the Stritzel Fight Club one-on-one. The same thing goes for the Adel Boys. I had the Usos, who said that in order to be the best, they would have to beat the Adels first, or the Stritzels, or both. American Alpha Academy, which is the tag team made of Chad Gable, Olympic competitor, and Otis, current WWE superstar. They are big fans of JoJo the Model Sebastian as well, but also JoJo the Bodybuilder, and our newest signee, Philip Ricardo Jr., and also fans of Jaden Brooks. So they're huge into those guys. Also from MVP, who is a wrestling guy who's been around the block a few times, been in several different wrestling companies. He is also one of the best talkers out there, and he also came from a very tough part, which is, he came from a place like I was, where he had, had to bite his claws way into there. And MVP says that the grits that the Mina boys and a lot of the smaller members of our roster show is absolutely encouraging. He's a huge fan of Shaheem Blue, my cousin, which hopefully Shaheem hears that. But Shaheem Blue is one of his favorites on Monday. And various other types of things. The superstar, formerly known as Ezekiel, I guess now he's called Ezekiel. He used to be Elias. Of course, he's fond of a lot of the musical acts. Current WWE superstar Sheamus, who is from Irish descent. Of course, he has a soft spot for the Lucky Ones, Jack and Tim. And several of a lot of people have talked about Jack and Tim, actually, the father-son team, as well as the father-son fist bump. And they love to see the family element represented. Actually, a lot of them say that, and a lot of them are very happy to see that family can actually work together to, rise in the company. The Usos are also very respectful of this. JoJo Sebastian, I was told other, by the way, John Cena would like a rematch. He doesn't feel like it was fair, their match. That was passed on to me. Triple H says that that's the person who now is in charge of WWE, Paul Levesque, great guy, and also an alumni, who is the one who I had a lot of this conversation with today, who has told me a lot of this. He has so much respect for the people of which that I basically found, stumbled upon, and when everyone else in the world was with their head in the sand, when everyone else in the world didn't know what they were going to do, what direction they were going to go in, when everyone else in the world stopped whatever it was they were in the process of. The people who I show on our show, we competed throughout that entire time with horrible software. So, needless to say, you know, our work, our superstars on our YouTube show have respect of actual WWE superstars. Everyone ranging from former MMA stars, like Bobby Lashley is a huge fan of some of our characters. Actually, Bobby Lashley is a big fan of Philip Ricardo Jr., actually. I just got to ask Phil about that. He claims to say that he knows Philip Ricardo and he has a lot of respect for him. And a little surprised he gets to see me on our show. So these are people who watch our show regularly. Ronda Rousey watches our show and is impressed. Shayna Baszler, the Queen of Spades, watches our shows. Several other people watch our YouTube show on a regular basis. It's basically, you know, it lets me know that we have a fan base. Granted, they have our, you know, it does make sense with my, you know, the rhythm of YouTube, because it says we have all of these views, but yet there's only so many subscribers or whatever. Well, apparently the views or the, you know, the amount of times they're shared or whatever is because they're coming from, you know, the people out of Stanford or whatever, and they're watching them collectively. And our superstars are giving them ideas and also giving them belief that these things are possible. So a lot of the guys want me to come back to work creative for the WWE, because other friends of mine, other people who I know who are set to return soon, who completely trust me and know that I know how to respectfully get their characters over, how to tell the stories that I need to. And because it's in a different environment, they want me to return to my position. And now, unlike before, it's going to be, you know, traveling or all over the place again. And I'll be expected to go on the road like any other person prior to before. When I worked for the creative before, I had to work from home for the most part, send over the what I needed to do, and that was kind of how I did things. If I take that position, I have to go on the road with the company, and I don't know if it's going to be Raw, SmackDown, or any of the specifics for that, but I do know that for the most part, if certain people who I know are on the shows, I'm probably going to be placed on the show that has the most people who have requested me, which... Imagine being requested by your old coworkers or your old friends to come and help and work. And they've been, I guess, you know, there was meetings and stuff, and they'll say, who do you guys recommend? And to hear that my name is amongst the boys as well in the locker room, although it's been since 2019, I've been there, or a little bit before 2020, it's a little humbling. And it's also, you know, kind of, I don't know. It's not something I'm used to getting praise like that. It's nice to know that our superstars are on our YouTube show are respected and getting the acknowledgement that they are. And because Triple H wanted to prove his point, he had to show me, because sometimes when we get so into something, and because I am so like... You know, I always put everything on our superstars, because they are the ones who get themselves over. We don't control anything. I just build them. But because of how I tell the stories, how they're presented, who they're against, and the, you know, how they're presented, they have inspired people. I've shared, you know, emails before from, you know, viewers who are just, you know, whoever, what our superstars mean to them. But to hear from actual superstars who have competed in NFL, who have competed in MMA, who have competed at a high level, that our superstars are, our show are the most respectful to our talent, and they want that respect in their real shows. And the fact that if you go to YouTube and you put in any of our stars on in the search engine, our shows are going to show up. These are real life people who do real life things. And maybe prior to being on our show, maybe they didn't have a YouTube social media thing. Maybe they were not seen prior. For example, if you take Mason or Carter Stritzel and put them into the search engine on the YouTube algorithm, it's going to be our videos will pop up first. But I only take the fact that Mason and Carter Stritzel have been part of our roster since I started this new initiative. Our whole family respects everybody on our roster, but the work ethic that the Stritzels put in, the Adels put in, the Mania boys put in, that the JoJo Sebastians, the JoJo the bodybuilders, that put in their real life to accomplish their real life goals are absolutely something to celebrate and absolutely something that should be admired, which is why I think it's awesome that the real life WWE superstars are respectful of our superstars and that our superstars are inspiring WWE superstars. Amazing. So I guess the question is, do I take this position? Do I do that? And what does that entail? Well, if I was to take this position working for WWE, I would be going on the road, expected to do that. And I would be writing real storylines with actual people there, which is kind of what I do in real life anyway. The video game characters are real people. I just book them against people who may or not exist. Unfortunately, because it's pro wrestling, I don't have the element of I won't have the element of may the best man win, because that's not how, unfortunately, that goes. But I can make it look like that in WWE. And there's that. But also I'd be expected to travel all over the place to, with the WWE when they travel. So what happens if that happens? What do I get out of that? Well, first and foremost, because they respect our stars as much as they do, where I go, and if we have stars that are represented there, they're going to get the golden ticket, so to speak, and they're going to be granted access the way most people wouldn't. Because in the end of the day, yeah, I build the people, and I tell the stories, and I write the matchups, but a lot of it else, everything else is up to them. So part of my conditions were that, they're honored and respected. So, of course, these people, like the Stritzels, the Adels, everyone on a roster, if I take this position, wherever we go, would have automatic free tickets and access to, the backstage, the locker room, because these real-life wrestling superstars want to meet their heroes. Imagine that, the people who have inspired them, the people who some of them they're afraid of. I thought of that. I said, that's interesting. But then the other element is my own family, my wife and my kids. How do they feel about that? Well, when I worked for WWE before, my wife was always on board, and I talked to my wife prior. When I left WWE, my son needed me. And also what I didn't say before is that under the old leadership, a lot of the things that I wanted to do, even though it was supposed to be the way it was completely altered. And, I took that as very disrespectful and may not have been compensated like I should have been. But I leadership. So there's that. The fact that the guys trust me to do these things to get the show where it needs to be. But then the other elements come, how does my kids feel about that? Me, I would have to be on the road with the WWE now. I want to make sure people understand what that means, because I don't think people quite – this is something that has always kind of both been a mystery, also something that I don't think people quite understand. If I go in – WWE superstars can be on the road anywhere from a year straight, a few months to a year, a couple of years straight on the road, and not see their family. That's something that I don't think a lot of people can comprehend. Imagine living where you lived your whole life or having an apartment or a home, and then the home you have when you work for WWE, you might not be home for, let's give you a small schedule, let's say 6 months to a year. Some guys don't even believe in the house. They just get a bus, just take their bus to city to city. John Cena had a bus because it was easier to own a house, own a bus on top of his house. He was never at his home because he was on the road for 3 years straight, John Cena, because of everything, and then everything else. Now, not only would that be the case, but because of my charity work and because of the, you know, my connections with the public, I'd be seen as an ambassador to the WWE. So that would mean, because remember, I'm not going to be an on-air talent. That's something you need to understand. If you're expecting me to go to Monday Night Raw and or SmackDown or NXT and walk out there and, you know, cut a promo on whoever, that's not what this is. This is me working behind the scenes to make the shows better, to give it more standout characters, to make the shows more stable, to give them better personalities, if you would, to give them believable something to bring it to where it needs to be. But in the same sense, you know, I would be able to go wherever we go to promote the, you know, my anti-bullying program, which WWE has their own rival. They have their own, you know, charity for that. They have several of their own charities. They do a lot of charities people don't really know about. But they would be willing to back my charities and the things that I hope to do. And I can still do the things that I've already have in place, which was one of my other things. For those people who don't know, Jazz and Friends Expo was originally supposed to happen in 2020. At that point, I already left WWE and I was on to bigger and better things. One of the things I figured when I retired from pro wrestling was to go into production and producing myself. You know, I had one plan, but all honesty, these amazing people who I've met around the way have inspired me enough to change a lot of those plans. You know, granted, the companies are all still there. All of the organizations are still backing everything. They're fantastic charities. I've worked with most of them before. And that hasn't changed, but, you know, the first event that was supposed to take place in the spring of 2000, was originally supposed to be in 2020, was supposed to be an independent wrestling show that was going to last like 2 days. It's going to be kind of like a mini WrestleMania where celebrities and wrestlers and whatever were going to be mingling together. That was the original concept. And then, you know, of course, nothing happened in 2020, which was a blessing because I got to meet real life people. And that is when I, you know, decided this year when I found out that everything is still on board and that everything is ready to go for 2023, which is next year. And that is why I changed the first event from a wrestling show to a celebrity basketball game. Now, the hopes of this is actually to have both. A lot of people have already signed in to be part of this. The idea is actually to get, you know, number one, we're raising money for the Jimmy Fund, Daniel Faber Institute. That's the first thing. But the other thing is, prior to this, basketball is a game that pretty much everybody can adapt to. It's a team thing, and people can take turns or whatever. So I said, since that's something that's pretty easy for everyone to kind of get together and kind of adapt to, I think that it would be a cool idea to have some of the Dream Masters and the Women Warriors of Wrestling to take part. So some of those people, I have reached out to some of those people already. Some of them have already signed in and they're all on board. Some of them I'm still waiting to hear back from. Some of them are on the fence. Again, this isn't until the spring of next year. And the other thing is, it is something personal for me because we are doing it in the honor of my mother, who next year will be 14 years that I lost my mom. She was killed in a hit and run 14 years ago next year. And we're going to start the event on the day that her anniversary of when she left us. But because my mother was a person who believed in fun, in life, and she played basketball. And when she played basketball, girls at that time didn't have a girls' team, so she was forced to play with the guys, with her twin brother, And because of the element of the fact that my mother played basketball, and again, it's adaptable, and because we're honoring my mother, who, again, it will be gone 14 years next year, and because of her courage and her guts and everything like that and her fun factor, we're going to be doing this in her honor, raising money for the Jimmy Fund, which is something she also would enjoy. So that is kind of the element for that event. And of course, we have a comedy festival in the summer of 2023 and what I call the Random Playlist Music Festival, which will take place in the fall for the Born This Way Foundation. And I have people already I've reached out to, and a lot of them were coming on before. Those two events haven't changed. I'm just adding more acts because now I know more and more people who are talented who may be able to take part and be inspired and reward them for these things. So these are big things. These are big decisions to make. So I can still do Jazz and Friends Expo next year. It's just, again, it's a weekend show. So one day it'll be a day of meet and greets and then basketball the other 2 days or vice versa. So that's kind of the element of what we're doing for the first event. And that's kind of how the element goes for the other two. The other events, the comedy festival and the music festival, will be one day of meet and greets. And then we're going to have, or a day of meet and greets. And then we're going to have 2 days of comedy or music, whatever the case may be. So that's kind of how that's going there for two other organizations. Born This Way is for the music festival and the Wounded Warriors Foundation for the comedy festival. So reward our brave men and women who suffer from illnesses you can't see or injuries you can't see. PTSD is a very serious thing. I know that all too well. But, you know, these are things that we can overcome and, you know, make them laugh in the process. So that's kind of the idea there. But so that's the decision that's on me. And my wife is at work currently as I am here at the public library. Did I mention that yet? Airing live from the local library again. And this is just a great place to come again. And I can't recommend this enough. And what's interesting is I was just talking to the woman yesterday about doing the because what people don't know is when my son and I did Dream Matches, we actually took the show to the libraries for a little while, and we did the shows live at the libraries. So what would happen is we bring the show on DVD form, and they would put it up on the screen, and then my son and I would do the commentary kind of like you hear on the show, but we did it live in front of an actual live library audience, and it was kind of fun. And we were going to do that here. I still would like to do that here, but we'll see if that can happen and whatever. And that's going to come down to with scheduling. And so now I'm placed in a position. Do I take this position and go back to WWE where I'll have to travel a lot? You know, and I don't know what show I'm working on. Again, that hasn't been narrowed down. I'm going to have to say wherever they really need the story arc and the character development. I'm not moving to Florida, so that's first and foremost. So I'm probably not going to be doing the whole NXT thing because that's at the time right now, NXT is kind of where it is. So I kind of worked with before, and I would probably have to go with, you know, whoever needed again. And also, one of the people who specifically asked for my return, because if they come back, they specifically want me there. If you see him on that show, there's a good chance that's where I am if I choose to do that. So I do know that he's planning on coming back. I do know they rehired him. I do know that he's returning soon. I know things that I'm not going to air because that's not how we do things, and I believe in some things being left unknown. But if I was a betting man, I'd say wherever that person goes, it's probably the show I'm probably going to end up on working in. And I'm going to bring the same element and the same energy to whatever I do now, only I'll be on the road with the WWE. And I can still do my public tours and so forth. And then if you're one of our active roster members on our current show, which they also believe I should still continue to do, then they will, you know, your family, whoever you are, wherever you are, you know, when WWE comes to your town, you know, granted, not everyone's wrestling fans, and I get that, but you will be granted passes to come and to take part in the backstage so their superstars can meet my superstars, I guess you'd say. So that's a lot to take in. By the way, I did want to say something about Stritzel Fight Club come from St. Louis, Missouri. Famously, one of the superstars who's currently injured right now, his son and his daughter are big fans of the Stritzel Fight Club specifically. And I was told by Paul today that Randy, when he comes back, he really wants to meet the Stritzels, and he wants to arrange a meeting with the Stritzel Fight Club and Randy Orton and his family, because he has a lot of respect for them, for their martial art background. Randy isn't known for martial arts. His dad is one of the most legend in wrestling. His dad is Cowboy Bob Orton, who was featured in the very first WrestleMania. Randy Orton comes from St. Louis as well, and they're happy to have the Stritzels represent them. And so just wanted to share that also, speaking of the Stritzel Fight Club. And also tomorrow, you know, we're going to be, WWE has, you know, given me access, and has given me the green light to support the superstars of our show. So I'm going to be reaching out to our various stars throughout, you know, whenever, and I'm going to be, you know, helping people out when they need it and so forth. So be looking for emails or whatever, because, you know, WWE, if I take this position, which I'm going to say 98% of this time, after already talking to my wife, she's already said that I should do it as long as I'm compensated and respected for it. And my kids, you know, they're older now, they're doing their own thing, but, you know, certainly I've had the opportunity that all the other superstars or other people in wrestling have had. I got to watch them grow, and I got to help them graduate and get them to that point. So I think where they're working in both in college and whatever they're doing, I think they're okay. And I'm still obviously going to be the dad, and I'm going to tell you right now that if the event, if something comes up or my family needs me, and I already told them this immediately, that's how quick I'm done, and that I'm going immediately to go back home to take care of my family. So that should be also known. But in the most part, you know, that's some big news, man. I'm happy to be able to share this meeting I had this morning. And it was an amazing time to talk. And, you know, I haven't seen Paul in a little while. I'm talking about Levesque, not Heyman. But collectively, everyone wants my return. They've requested my return now that, you know, they feel I'd be able to add in where, you know, Triple H, Paul Levesque is in charge of a lot of things. And because our YouTube show has shown that I haven't changed my creativity, and I still have the element. I even taught people who, young kids, how to do, you know, commentary, how to book shows, because I still have that ability. And you know what, though? As I told them, I said, well, you know, he made the show. I just went along with it. JoJo Sebastian is the star of that, and Jackson R. Scott was good on the other one. That was just me doing me. I mean, they're smart individuals. JoJo Sebastian's incredibly intelligent and creative. His mom's one of the best people I could talk to. She is always able to, you know, get a hold of me. A lot of the I love the interactions I have with a lot of the people I do. I also understand that, you know, people's schedules and stuff like that. I don't get upset if I don't hear back from people right away, because people are busy making their goals and dreams happen, and I'm more about that. When I told the Stritzels that I was coming on today, and this is a big show, and again, they are people who are specifically mentioned, as well as the Menya Boys. Shawn Michaels, by the way, HBK himself, He is also wanting to meet the Menya boys, and he wants to take you guys, wants to go and maybe go up to Mexican lunch or whatever, because he's also from San Antonio, Texas. And he says that you guys are probably the two toughest young men he's ever seen, and that when you're old enough, he's probably going to send you to NXT. But anyway, that was the Menya boys out of Texas, because Shawn Michaels is good friends with Triple H, so he wanted me to share that with the Menya boys as well as everyone else. The Adels are respected. Everyone has the overwhelming response throughout the whole thing is that everyone seems to have people on our roster who people gravitate to for whatever reason. A lot of the guys who are into fitness are, of course, into the, you know, the bodybuilder and the fitness guys. A lot of the martial art guys and the guys who are into striking and stuff like that. Paul Levesque, Triple H, is huge in on UFC, and he is impressed by almost every single one of our MMA competitors. And also, one of the things they hope to do is to bring some type of that element to the WWE at some point. And don't think it's going to be like that stupid, whatever that, they had that tournament back in the day, the Brawl for All. It's not going to be anything like that, because I refuse to take part in that. But there is some type of element they want to feature more and more of the cage fighting type of thing in WWE. So apparently our MMA Grand Prix title matches have been inspiring to Paul Levesque, and a lot of the guys who compete in martial arts are huge fans of a lot of our MMA competitors. Even our, you know, stars over in Russia, you know, Yevgeny Verkhovets, number 13, several people who are into the whole football scene, aka soccer, are huge fans of him, and they think it's actually one of the people who Berkowitz beat, number 13 beat, was this giant oaf of a man in real life, one of the superstars, and he has earned respect because when I told him how old the person really was and who the person really was, they laughed. And, you know, the fact that these people are based on real people and our stars are respected by their stars, that's something to be respected. And, you know, I'm proud of our roster. I'm proud of everyone who takes part in our show, and I'm proud of our involvement with them. And I'm about 98% certain I'm probably going to be taking this position. And so if that comes, I'm still going to be able to, you know, part of my deal, much like one of my other friends who is going to be a coworker with me, is Bruce Pritchard. So actually, I think the idea is, you know, I'm going to be working with him and Heyman, and that's like the three-man group. So it's going to be interesting to work with both elements. But, you know, and I don't have a problem with any one of those guys. They're all brilliant minds. I don't have any problem with any of those guys. And so I guess we'll have to wait and see. Yeah? I'm very happy to share that with you guys, that information with you guys. And I guess today is going to be the rest of the day. I'm going to be taking some time to think, do I return? And I'm pretty certain I am. Of course, when my wife gets home from work, I'll tell her about the awesome meeting, and she'll probably tell me, absolutely, you're a fool if you don't. And the other thing is to know that if I do take this, wherever I go, back there and keep me inspired, also inspire actual stars. So just know that when we come to town, that you're going to, if I find out where we are, and we're going to be giving you guys passes, and you guys will be coming backstage and get to see me in person along with the other WWE superstars. So we can thank you guys in person. So, you know what, for once, I'm actually going to go the entire rest of the 6 minutes and 10 seconds left we have on the show. So I've obviously given shout outs, both from the people who told me specifically to shout out those certain people and whatnot. I am going to be going, since I'm still, you know, on board with working and doing the whole Monster Mania thing. I am going to be committed to that. I am still going to be taking part as a as working part of the Monster Mania staff. So in a couple weeks, I think it's next week, in fact, we're going down to Hunt Valley, Maryland for Monster Mania 51, I want to say. And if it is, come on down. I'll be there in Hunt Valley, Maryland, working staff for the Monster Mania crew. There's going to be great horror celebrities there in Hunt Valley, Maryland. My first time, by the way, in Hunt Valley, Maryland. So that should be fun. I'll be there on staff working out there and helping everyone out, making sure everyone has a great time, and making sure everyone is safe and everything else. If you see me there, say hello. I don't bite. And also November, I'm going to be returning to Monster Mania as we go back to Oak, Pennsylvania. And again, same thing in return. If you guys are in the Oak, Pennsylvania area of Oak, Pennsylvania, come on by and say hello. I will be there along with the other horror icons and Monster Mania staff people. So come on by, say hello and whatnot. I just can't say enough about how grateful I am to everyone. And I want to say thank you to everyone who is taking time to come on this show, young and old. Oh, can't say that. Can't lend without this. To a quick happy birthday to our friend, Sean Foster, who is also AKA the horror god himself. He's my horror brother from another mother. He is one of my Monster Mania friends for life, my brothers in the F4L. I hope he has a wonderful day. I hope he has an enjoyable birthday. And maybe we'll see each other at the next Monster Mania or whatever, but happy birthday to Sean, the horror god himself on Instagram or whatever. Go check out his YouTube page. He's doing stuff there too still at the horror god. So go check him out. Happy birthday to him. And again, thank you guys all so very much for, you know, taking time today to listen. Everyone who's going to listen to this afterwards, thank you guys for keeping me focused on what's important and ultimately for always being you, always given that time. As silly as it sounded when I first messaged any of you about coming on board part of this, I want to thank you guys for trusting me and believing in me and believing in the show. Everyone who's new, old, whatever, I thank you guys, and you guys are forever going to be my F4L, wherever you are in the world. I hope that our Russian friends can translate that and know that I am respectful, and I think you guys are great. Ivan, Igor, and Yasina Verkovitz, all those guys over there and across the world, thank you guys indelibly for keeping me focused, keeping me me. And always being you, and that's the important thing. Keep fighting for your dreams. Keep doing what you're doing. You guys can reach me at www.dreammatches, DREAMMATCHES, at gmail.com. Or you can find me on Instagram at F4LIcon, SEANJAZZSTEVENS1 on Instagram. Or you can find me all brand new at the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, on TikTok. Yep, I joined TikTok because I needed something fun to do. And I just started over there, so I need all the help I get to build that up. just to keep people light and do something fun. So again, I want to say thank you to everyone everywhere who has taken part of the show. And when I come to your town with the WWE, know that we're going to be looking for you guys, and we're going to be giving you guys, you know, the treatment for coming in and helping inspire everyone and for being awesome. So there's that. There's the 90-second mark. And to the bullies, trolls, haters out there in the world, this is just another example of why people like me and the people like we feature in our YouTube show succeed in life, where the rest of you guys just sit there in your parents' basement and wish you could do any of the things that our stars can. And so there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to say thank you, and may all of your dreams come true from the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens. Peace, everybody.